Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see. Nothing to see. Nothing to see.
Experimental radio produced by NASCAD University.
You are listening to Nothing to See Here. Experimental radio from NASCAD University. This episode is entitled Meantime in Greenwich.
Tick-tock around the clock we go, clocking our time, counting the moments, second-hand emotions hour away our days. What are days for? Days are for keeping the clocks busy. Idle clock hands are the devil's work. In 1876, Sandford Fleming, the Scottish-born engineer who built railroads across Canada, finds himself waiting in a rural train station in Ireland for 12 hours because AM and PM have been misprinted in the timetable. And so Sandford Fleming has time to think, and during this time, he thinks about how difficult it is to schedule trains when every town in the world sets its clock by the sun. For a railway engineer, this is a terrible situation. Often train stations need multiple clocks to tell the time in different cities. Mistakes are made. Accidents happen. While waiting for 12 hours, Sandford Fleming thinks about the sedate life that most people lived before the railroads and how the sun was the only clock we needed. But now people are on the move. Industry demands efficiencies. And after all, the world is now linked together through telegraph. It is time for the mechanical age of the clock to trump the natural time of the sun. And so it was, during this long wait in a rural train station in Ireland, that Sandford Fleming resolved himself to undertake what became his most notable achievement, the standardization of the time zones around the world. It was about time. It was about time that they all sat down at the table and talked about time. For years they followed the sun, obeying the rhythms of night and day, and everyone's time was different. But in the industrial world, with timetables and telegraphs, something had to be done about time. And so the diplomats and world leaders met in Washington, D.C. in 1884, for the World Time Conference engineered by Sandford Fleming. They came for the railroad barons, the frustrated travelers, and the scientific pragmatists fed up with the unwieldy tapestry of time zones that covered the planet. And so the world adopted the 24 standard time zones we know today. It was not, however, without dissent and acrimonious debate. It was with the strenuous objections from the French that the prime meridian of this new world system was placed in Greenwich, England. And so we owe it to the Canadian Sandford Fleming, who succeeded in one of the most difficult engineering challenges of the century, navigating the pitfalls of world diplomacy to create one of the first great international agreements of scientific standards. In 1884, Greenwich is in its prime. Greenwich is primed and ready to go. Greenwich is at the center of an empire where the sun never sets. Greenwich is ready for prime time. Even though the prime meridian could be drawn along any longitude, most of the nautical maps of the world already point towards Greenwich in 1884. And so, at the Prime Meridian Conference in Washington, D.C., Greenwich became the capital of time for the world. The French objected to having to set their clocks to English time. And Greenwich even became a target of a bomb attack by a French anarchist in 1894, becoming the center of the first international terrorist incident in modern Britain. The The gnomon is the pointy bit of the sundial that creates the shadow and tells the time. But what is it that time is trying to tell us? The gnomon is telling us solar time. This isn't clock time. This isn't mean time. The gnomon is an island of time in a sea of change. Do we even remember the time before this time? Can you remember real time? Time is now something that connects us together in an electronic embrace. Nowadays, time is the language spoken by machines. In the meantime, in Greenwich Mean Time, all comes to those who wait, although time waits for no man. But the gnomon stops at nothing, casting shadows on our future, asking, is this the end or a means to an end? And in the meantime, time is so mean, time means our end. Why is time so mean to us? What did we ever do to it? What time is it? Is there more than one? Surely the only time is now, here and now, this time here. This is where the time is. You might ask me, where did the time go? And you might ask me, where did the time come from? And I would say, time goes around and around, all around you. This is local time, where the shadows in the world are hands on nature's clock. Cosmic time is everywhere, all at the same time. Cosmic time is time without end, where all the time that has happened is equal to all the time that is left. Cosmic time is a time that is everywhere and nowhere in particular. In cosmic time, time is outside our world, looking in. Cosmic time is the great referee, the great leveler. It is the time that will keep plodding on even after we're gone. It is the god of gods, Kronos. Sanford Fleming wanted the world to count the days with cosmic time and obey a single world clock. Fleming's cosmic time was of its time. It was the embodiment of the industrial, the rational, the engineered. It was nature tamed by science's laws. It was Newtonian in all its clockwork glory. Fleming wanted to rid the world of the nuisance of local time. He wanted the world to be synchronized together through electrical signals that circled the globe. But just as the world came together to agree to set the clock to cosmic time, cosmology was being turned upside down by a patent clerk in Switzerland. Time, for Albert Einstein, was part of the world. Einstein put the hyphen between space and time and described a world of relativity, where time was relative to space and speed and gravity. He brought time back into the world. And so, just as the world became synchronized together by adopting the standard time zones, physics showed us that synchronization itself was impossible. In classical physics, time and space are like oil and water. They don't mix. Space is just there, tangible and unchanging. But time doesn't stand still. Time moves. It stretches and flows. Liquid time, intangible, unretractable. Sanford Fleming gave us the time zones, parts of the world synchronized together, north and south, sharing the same time. Sanford Fleming drew a new map of the world and created 24 new countries of time. And now time is in the zone. Time is zoned out, fenced in. But time is still tricky. The jagged lines of the time zones that are now drawn across the Earth's surface at about every 15 degrees of latitude show how even time has had to negotiate the particularities of geography and political boundaries. You just can't tell William Tell anything. You can't just joke with him and say, "Hey, William Tell, try to shoot this apple off your son's head," because he would. That's the kind of guy he was. That's what happened with Zeno the Greek. He came to town making overtures, saying you don't have to take it anymore. You've got to stand up to the man. And pronto, just like that, William Tell was telling it like it was. But it didn't go down so well. You could tell. That's when Bill had to step up and do his little trick. Apple on the head, Bill Jr., sweating it. Zeno was whispering in his ear. He had Bill convinced that even if he shot that arrow at the apple, it would never arrive. "Time is an illusion, man," he said, "law of diminishing returns." But I could see a glint in old Bill's eye, William's Tell, I like to call it. Like the guy who throws knives down at the sideshow, he knew what he was doing. Some people called William Tell a hero. Others said he was a terrorist. I wish we could get our story straight on that one. Who was that masked man? Don't kill time, kill yourself, the anarchists say. It was a French anarchist, Martin Bourdin, who on February 15, 1894, strode towards the Royal Greenwich Observatory carrying a homemade bomb. He was just steps away from blowing up the prime meridian, from killing time. If time wasn't free, then none of us were. But he stumbled. Perhaps nerves got the most of him. The scientists inside the observatory heard the explosion and rushed to the window just in time to see smoke billowing up over the green parkland of Greenwich Park. Onlookers rushed to the scene to find Bourdin's broken body somehow still alive. They rushed him to the nearby Siemens Hospital, where he died half an hour later, silent to the end about the message he hoped to speak in the first words in the new language of international terrorism. Time after time, we repeat ourselves. And time after time, things get changed along the way, in the retelling. Joseph Conrad's 1907 novel, The Secret Agent, A Simple Tale, was based on the events of February 15, 1894, when an anarchist named Martin Bourdin attempted to blow up the Royal Observatory in Greenwich. In the novel, Conrad extrapolates from the rather sketchy details to create a simple tale of a secret agent named Verloc, who works for an unnamed foreign government and undertakes a disruptive anarchist attack in London, an outrage against modern standardization and scientific authority. The plot goes terribly wrong when the mentally disabled brother of Verloc's wife is killed carrying the bomb for Verloc. In the end, Verloc gets his comeuppance as his wife learns about her husband's involvement in the plot and plunges a fork into his chest. But then we have this simple tail wagging a rather more complicated dog. Conrad's story, often cited as the first novel about terrorism in English literature, becomes a blueprint for other outrages. The novel was found in the hut of the Unabomber, who also targeted scientific establishments in his bombing campaign in the 1980s. The Unabomber was known to have used the name Conrad as a pseudonym and strongly identified with the character of the professor who would travel around London with his hand grasping the trigger of a live bomb. And so the facts and the fictions of violence began their strange dance in the world of modern culture. History repeats itself. Fact becomes fiction. Fiction becomes fact. Time and time again. And so around and around we go. Revolutions are circular. Around the clock, again and again, outrage after outrage. In 1936, Alfred Hitchcock made a film called Sabotage, based on Joseph Conrad's novel, The Secret Agent, a novel that was based on an actual anarchist attack on the Royal Observatory at Greenwich on February 15, 1894. Twice removed from the facts, Hitchcock made significant changes to the story. In a nod to his profession, Hitchcock has the secret agent, Verloc, running a cinema to cover his anarchist activities. Nod as Conrad had it running a pornographic bookshop. Also, the climax of the film occurs not at Greenwich, but when the younger brother of Verloc's wife is killed when a time bomb hidden in a film canister explodes on a double-decker bus in central London. Hitchcock, the master of suspense, introduces a classic cinematic device, the time bomb, into the equation. On July 7, 2005, coordinated explosions caused by homemade organic peroxide-based devices packed into rucksacks targeted the London Underground and bus system. The now well-known outrages of suicide bombings, choreographed for the most spectacular effect, once again rang out. From the vantage point of a chain of literary references, the attacks felt like deja vu. The explosion on a double-decker bus in Tavistock Square that day had an eerie resemblance to the anarchist explosion in Hitchcock's film. And around we go again. Prisoner number 04475-046 is serving hard time, a life sentence without the possibility of parole in a supermax facility in Florence, Colorado. The prisoner had previously spent his time living alone in a cabin in the woods, where he would occasionally build bombs and send them to academic institutions, airlines, and technology companies. His career as a bomber spanned nearly 20 years. He killed 3 people and injured 23 others. His name is Theodore Kaczynski, more popularly known by the name used by the FBI, the Unabomber. Kaczynski was a fan of Joseph Conrad's novel, The Secret Agent. He identified with the character of the professor, an anarchist who specialized in explosives. Kaczynski had once been a professor of mathematics himself in Berkeley, California, before his hostility and disaffection toward the world caused him to retreat to Montana and become a domestic terrorist. He used the threat of his continuing bomb attacks to blackmail the New York Times and the Washington Post into publishing his anarcho-primitivist manifesto, Industrial Society and Its Future. It was after reading the manifesto that Kaczynski's brother, David Kaczynski, thought he recognized his brother's identity and alerted the FBI, leading to Kaczynski's arrest. Events occur in real time. In the mean streets of a paranoid world, Jack Bauer of the counter-terrorist unit fights against the clock. Throughout 24 consecutive one-hour episodes that comprises a season of the American television series 24, Jack Bauer selflessly fights to try to prevent a terrorist attack. The urgency of the drama is exacerbated by an image of a digital clock that is regularly introduced into the montage, reminding us that cinematic time and our real-world time have been synced together, not even to be interrupted by commercials. 24 exploits the classic ticking time bomb device to drive the plot forward. 24 writer Virgil Williams says that the clock is one of the characters of the show, And although the show seems to unfold in real time, it also uses the conventional staples of TV structure. Rising action, plot arcs, climaxes, and cliffhanger endings, each conveniently organized within each episode. The events may occur in real time, but real time has been carefully constructed. The moral dimension of this dark post 9/11 worldview moves towards the ethical pragmatics suggested by the phrase, "the ends justifies the means." The imperatives of the drama make torture seem justified in the race against the clock. Although the Canadian-born star Kiefer Sutherland has suggested that the show is just a piece of nail-biting drama, it has warped the debate around terrorism. Congressmen in the United States, speaking before congressional hearings about the debates of waterboarding and torture, have actually asked, "What would Jack Bauer do?" Once again, terror and fiction have been confused. The real world of time and the cinematic world of high drama have become blurred. How many times does the bomb get defused with just seconds left on the counter? The ticking time bomb is a favorite plot device of the action film, demanding action and reminding us of the tyrannies of mechanical time. The ticking time bomb has also become shorthand for the moral and ethical problem. Do the ends justify the means? The problem is usually put something like this. If a ticking time bomb is set to go off, is it justified to torture someone who might know where the bomb is? This moral thought experiment has been distorted by its overuse in film. As governments reshape security and privacy in a post 9/11 world, fiction has replaced reality as the magnetic north of the moral compass. Although real-life ticking time bomb situations almost never exist, experts like Harvard professor Alan Dershowitz continue to cite the TV series 24 and the character Jack Bauer as a way of endorsing legislation supporting torture.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the ring in this corner, wearing purple shorts, a baggy sweater, unkempt head of hair, and Groucho mustache, the heavyweight champion of the world of physics, hailing from Ulm, Germany, the discoverer of the laws of relativity and the winner of the Nobel Prize for Physics, Albert Einstein. And in the opposite corner, wearing orange shorts, a stiff starched collar, and a monocle from Paris, France, the world-renowned philosopher, Henri Bergson. Fighters, please come to the center of the ring. You know the rules. No kicking, no biting, no character assassination. Please keep your political opinions to yourself. The first one of you to describe the true nature of time will win this match. Please touch your gloves and begin on the ring of the bell. Bergson leads with an assertion that time has physical, psychological, and philosophical dimensions. Einstein counters, blocking the philosophical arguments. He is only interested in the physics of time.
Times Square. What is the square of time? What is time times time? How many times can time be time? One time at a time? Double time? Many times? Times Square is actually a triangle of land bought by the New York Times in 1904. This is where time gets squared away. Every year at midnight on New Year's Day, the world synchronizes its watches, watching the time ball drop. It was 1907 when the first time ball dropped in Times Square. The time ball is a tradition that dates back to 1833, when ship captains would set their clocks at 1 o'clock each day by watching the time ball drop at the Greenwich Observatory in London. There were time balls around the world. There is even one on the clock tower in Halifax that used to tell time before the cannon. Times Square. What is the shape of time? Square time? Time that covers the four corners of the world? Covering the world like a sheet on a military bed, pulled taut with hospital corners, the earth comfortably wrapped in time, unaware of the monster under the bed named Einstein. Einstein who would short sheet time. Einstein the square who unsquared time and space. E equals mc squared. All those times, all those New York Times, many times, all those naked stories in this naked city, millions of them, one for every broken light on Broadway. Remember that time when two street vendors spotted smoke coming from a vehicle in Times Square and alerted an NYPD patrolman? They stopped an attempted car bombing, a terrorist attack. The bomb had been ignited but failed to explode, and it was disarmed before it caused any casualties. Faster than a New York minute. Good times. Good times. And remember that time that the New York Times saw it fit to print the Unabomber manifesto to stop him from sending more bombs? The good times and the bad. And you know all those times in Times Square when they dropped the ball, New Year's Day. You can set your watch by it. There's where the world syncs up. A billion people watch that every year. That's when New York time is world time. No wonder that New York doesn't get enough sleep. In 1796, the Royal Astronomer at the Greenwich Royal Observatory, Neville Maskelyne, fired his assistant, David Kinbrook, because Kinbrook's observations were consistently a tenth of a second different from his own. The implications of a tenth of a second for observations at Greenwich were considerable. When applied to a calculation of the sun's position in relationship to longitude, for instance, it could result in errors of nearly half a kilometer on Greenwich's famous nautical maps. The American psychologist Edwin Boring pointed out that this was the first time scientists recognized the importance of what is known as the personal equation. That is, the understanding that different reaction times yielded different scientific observations. The difficulty of precisely synchronizing the human perceptual apparatus to the observable world would become a persistent problem for scientific enterprises for the next few centuries. It led to the split between objective scientific truth and inner psychological states, and inspired the move towards more verifiable evidence gathered by scientific instruments instead of human observers. In the strange way that science progresses, it was Albert Einstein who, in trying to understand the objective existence of time, came up with the revolutionary idea that every person experiences a different physical time depending on their particular relation to gravity and speed. It is an irony that the nascent ideas of relativity were born in 1796 at the Greenwich Observatory, a name that has become synonymous with the idea of absolute and universal synchronized time. Albert Einstein said, "Life is like riding a bicycle. In order to keep your balance, you must keep moving." And so Albert Einstein rides around on his bike. Around and around he goes, his mad mop of hair bobbing around. Albert Einstein is a clown, a comedian. He rode circles around Isaac Newton. Newton's clockwork universe that had served physics for generations was undone as time became relatively malleable and elastic in Einstein's hands. Surrounded by the cuckoo clocks of Zurich, Einstein melted the solid blocks of time with the white-hot flame of theory. Einstein said that nothing could travel faster than the speed of light. Einstein said the speed of light is approximately 671 million miles per hour. That is extremely fast, but just the fact that light has a speed limit at all presents us with some tricky problems. Fleming's world of perfectly synchronized time spreading throughout the universe is impossible in Einstein's idea of relativity. Space is not the final frontier. The final frontier is time. When will we reach the end of time? How will we know when we get there? Space and time were like oil and water for most classical physicists. They didn't mix. Space is tangible, but time is invisible. For years, classic physics assumed that time was a constant, the blank canvas that the physical world was painted on. It was Einstein who presided over the marriage of these two solitudes. The vows that physics took inserted a hyphen between space and time, and the pictures of the world now had to be painted on curved surfaces, where gravity warped space and time around its cosmic presence. It was the philosopher Henri Bergson, the French philosopher of time, who spoke up when Einstein asked if there was anyone who had any reasons why these two should not be wed in holy matrimony. For Bergson, time was not a physical dimension, but a psychological experience. Space and time were incompatible concepts. Did it work, this marriage of inconvenience? Well, if it didn't, your GPS device won't work since satellites have to take into account the theory of relativity to stay in orbit. We know that clocks play tricks behind our backs. If we are having fun, the clocks speed up. As we watch the water boil, the clocks slow down, just to see our reactions. Sure, a clock face is pretty deadpan, but they are laughing at us behind our backs. Time is a landscape carved from experience flowing through the desert of our mind. Tributaries, rivers, flash floods, soggy marshes of time. Oceans of experience. The mechanical clock knows nothing of these things. It just keeps the drumbeat going. Dali's painting, The Persistence of Memory, painted in 1931 from what Dali called the surrealist perception of a camembert cheese melting in the sun, shows his famous soft watches. This is time melting from the heat of memory. This is the 25th time zone, the one inside your head. And sometimes you say, that will take no time, no time at all. But is there such a thing? A thing called no time? Zeno had us imagine an arrow speeding towards a target. Ever since it left the bowstring, the arrow has been moving to a halfway point between where it came from and where it's going. Even when it reaches that halfway point, there is still another midpoint for it to get to. No matter how close it gets to the target, it has to get to the midpoint first. There is always more ground to cover. So how will it ever get to its destination? It seems as if it will always take more time. There is something reassuring, then, about seeing an arrow flying through the air, cutting through all the mathematical paradoxes that attempt to prevent it from actually getting to its destination. It is reassuring because we don't live in a world of mathematical time. We live with our experience of time. This arrow of time is not a paradox at all. If we imagine that each of us is an arrow, we move toward death, but we will never get there. We will never get to the end of our lives because there is always more life to live. death is not an experience of life. Our lives will always be about getting towards the next halfway point.
There was a tree over there in the forest that fell down. I'm sorry you missed it. It was quite spectacular. The other day a man was here who was clapping with just one hand. That was also quite good. I wish you could have been here for that. It's good to take it all in, to get away from it all, from the hustle and bustle of everyday life, to have a bit of downtime. If you had been here last week, you could have seen an angel dancing on the head of a pin. Such pretty dancing. I think you would have liked that. And if you listened very carefully, you could have heard a pin drop into that haystack over there. If I had time, I would help you find it. I recently lost a needle in that very haystack. I really do need to get that needle back. Heaven knows how I'm ever going to get my camel through the eye of that needle. But why worry about that now? It's time to relax, not time to worry. In a world where time is money, you can spend a lot of time trying to save money, or you can spend a lot of money trying to save time. Does it matter? Down here at the bottom of time, it's about you. Downtime is your time. Downtime is quality time. Leisure time. Me time. Downtime is when you are off the clock. This is when you can get down. Not down for the count. Not counting the seconds. No second thoughts. Because this is what really counts. Putting up your feet and taking time off. Downtime.
Time's up. Up, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's a satellite. Circling the globe at 12,500 miles an hour. Just one of 24 satellites synchronized together to create a global positioning system that can pinpoint your position anywhere on the surface of the planet. GPS makes space the slave of time. GPS continues Sanford Fleming's work of synchronizing the clocks. But the dance of time and space, as choreographed by Albert Einstein, requires that the satellite's clocks are adjusted by 7 millionths of a second every day to account for the effects of relativity. Without that, it would only take 2 minutes for the whole system to go out of sync. Thank you.
You have been listening to Nothing to See Here, a program of experimental radio from NASCAD University. This episode was called Meantime in Greenwich. This episode was adapted from audio produced for an augmented reality public art project by David Clark. Meantime in Greenwich was commissioned by the City of Halifax as a site-specific installation at Sir Sanford Fleming Park in Halifax. The installation consists of 24 custom sundials distributed throughout the park. With an iPhone app, the audience could listen to 24 separate stories about time and the father of the time zones, Sir Sanford Fleming. The park was donated to the city of Halifax when Sanford Fleming died. The installation also features 24 augmented reality objects triggered by the sundials and seen through the iPhone app. This radio program presents the 24 stories recorded for the piece and features the voice of Neil Thompson. Meantime in Greenwich was written by David Clark. Sound design and editing were by David Clark.
The autonomous Komi Republic, which is part of the Russian Federation, is situated in the far northwest of Europe and spreads up to the Arctic part of the Ural Mountains. It's crossed by 9 northern parallels. 10 fair-sized European states could be placed on its territory. Besides indigenous residents, that is, the Komi people, there are also Russians, Ukrainians, Nenets, Chuvashis, and Tartars. And now let's go back into history a little bit. A boy lying on skins behind our backs was turning the knobs of a small transistor radio.
Making efforts to use radios as vehicles of the psychological warfare.
And the tent was suddenly filled with an announcer's voice speaking Komi. Then with music from Moscow, followed by English and French speech.
The recording was made at the Moscow Theater of Musical Miniatures.
Now, back to modern times.
Your attention, please. At the recommendation of the International Time Bureau, commencing at 23 hours, 59 minutes, 60 seconds UTC, an extra second will be inserted into the NBS time scale. This adjustment is required to maintain internationally coordinated universal time as broadcast from these stations in close agreement with UT1 or astronomical time.
WA6ODB with a question.
And,
do you know how many time zones there are in the Soviet Union?
And about power.
We
got so much power now.
Do you know how many time zones there are in the Soviet Union?
We got so much power now. That's ridiculous.
Do you know how many time zones there are in the Soviet Union?
Power and all that. That's power. We got so much power. That's ridiculous.
We have
power, 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 power now. It's ridiculous. We got so much power now.
Do you know how many time zones there are in the Soviet Union?
It's not even funny. That's ridiculous.
Do you know how many?
It's not even funny. That's ridiculous.
Do you know how many?
That's ridiculous.
Do you know how many times?
That's ridiculous. It's not even funny. It's not even funny. It's not even funny.
Do you know how many time zones there are in the Soviet Union?
It's not even funny. How many time zones?
Yeah. We have 4 in this country, right?
How many time zones?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3.
4 in this country, right?
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh.
4. 1, 2, 3. Yes, sir.
Right?
1, 2, 3. Yes, sir.
Uh-huh.
4 time zones?
Yeah. We have 4 in this country, right?
No, sir.
We have.
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh.
And,
do you know how many time zones they have?
Yes, sir. 4. No, sir. I never really studied that up.
11.
11. It's not even funny.
Eleven.
That's ridiculous.
11.
11. Well, that's what we can do. We can go anywhere because we live here. We can go anywhere else.
But not only the right of free travel, I'm saying 11.
11. 1, 2, 3. Yes, sir.
Huh? 11.
11.
That's how big they are.
Yeah. 11.
That's how big they are.
Yeah. I can believe that. I'm a firm believer in that.
You're right.
1, 2, 3. 4. Yes, sir. 1, 2, 3. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Huh?
The Soviet Union's the whole half side of the world.
Yeah.
And we're just one little tenth of the globe.
Yeah.
When you talk about fighting, we're a country that we're a firm believer on Christ, and it's called help thy neighbor. Do not kill, do not, you know, steal, cheat, lie from everybody. That's why we have to have computers, because man, nobody is perfect, you know?
Huh?
It's not even funny.
You meant?
And about power, man, nobody is perfect, you know?
So what is your point?
Nobody is perfect, you know?
So what is your point, Glenn?
There's two things you don't talk about. One's politics, and the other one's religion.
You meant?
The reason you don't talk about them is because they combine in each other. You know what I'm saying?
Do you know how many time zones there are in the Soviet Union?
You know what I'm saying?
Don't you kid yourself. Thanks, Glenn, for the, just thanks for the good thoughts.
This concludes our transmission to Oceania. However, listeners in East Asia may continue listening on the following shortwave frequencies. 6110, 7230, 9565, 9760, 15160, and 15425 kilohertz.
Separate them.
Here it comes.
You know that little clock? The one on your VCR? The one that's always blinking 12 noon? Because you never figured out how to get in there and change it. So it's always the same time. Just the way it came from the factory. Good morning. Good night. Same time tomorrow. We're in record. So here are the questions. Is time long? Or is it wide? And the answers? Sometimes the answers just come in the mail. And one day you get that letter you've been waiting for forever. And everything it says is true. And then in the last line it says, burn this. What I really want to know is this. Are things getting better? Or are they getting worse? Stop. Stop. Pause. Pause. We're in record. Because history's story that we half remember, and most of them never even get written down. And so when they say things like, We're gonna do this by the book. You have to ask, what book? Because it would make a big difference if it was Dostoevsky. Or just, you know, burning buildings in a fiery red sea. I remember all my lovers. I remember how they held me. Who came before me were in record. Come here, little girl. Get into the car. It's a brand new Cadillac. Bright red. Come here, little girl. When my father died, we put him in the ground. When my father died, it was like a whole library had burned down. Stop, stop. Same time tomorrow. And wild beasts shall rest there. And owls shall answer one another there. And the hairy ones shall dance there. And sirens in the temple. Speak my language.